Great to be here today. So Leidenium, let's talk about that. So the Linux open channel is the subsystem. There's like, when we have look at SSDs today, there's kind of different challenges with SSDs. And I'm going to go through three of those and show what motivates why we have open channel SSDs today. So the first challenge is that how do we obtain I/O predictability and I/O isolation on SSDs today? SSDs are growing. We are getting 16 terabyte SSDs where basically your user workloads might only be a 1 terabyte. So you're going to put multiple users on the same SSD, and those will probably interfere with each other. And we can see that this becomes a problem when we look at this graph, where if you have a random read on a drive and what happens when you start introducing writes into it, what we can see is that in the beginning, when you just have random reads, you have predictable latency, everything is fine. But as soon as you add just a little bit of writes, then you start to have latency outliers, you start to have bad performance. And that continues on as you add more. And in the end, you have IOs, outliers, that are as slow as spinning drives. So that's one of the problems and one of these open channels these seeks to solve. The other two things are that we have lock-on-lock. We have indirection, and the narrow block interface prevents us from making good data placement decisions in the host. The lock-on-lock problem is that basically when you look at this host software stack, you maybe have a lock-structured database system on top in the user space, then you have a lock-structured file system in the kernel space, and then underneath on the SSD, you also have a lock-structured data structure and FTL. And they all implement this kind of lock-structured approach to it. And when you write from RocksDB, you don't know where your data ends up on the SSD. And that basically leads to, both from the SSD point of view, that leads to write amplification, and it leads to our extra garbage collection on the SSD. The last challenge is that we have write indirection, and we don't know about the state of the SSD. How it's behaving. So when you write to an SSD, you don't actually write to the media. You write to a buffer inside of the SSD, which means that your writes are decoupled from the reads, which means that when you do a write and you come back 10 seconds later, and you're saying, well, my write is finished, and now I do my read, well, we might have made a decision to actually flush 10 seconds later inside of the SSD. And that means that you still have unpredictable latency. So you cannot make a model on top of this where it's vendor-specific in how you implemented the FTL and how you do the policies within the SSD. And that basically means that it's a best effort solution. We can make a model for a particular SSD, a particular firmware, but you cannot have a general purpose model for how your workloads are going to behave on a single type of SSD. And that's kind of the core problem, is how do you actually enable that to be building models and also have predictable I/O performance. So to give a little background for why this happens, so if you take an SSD today, simplified, you have a host interface with read and write, expose the read-write interface. But inside of the SSD, particularly for the NAND media, you have read-write arrays. And for the SSD, for this media, it has like multiple of them, tens of them, maybe even more than 100 of these parallel units, dies and NAND dies. And each of them delivers, like if you want to do a read, you can do that in 50 to 100 microseconds. But if you do a write or erase, it takes milliseconds. So usually what happens when you get this, these outliers is that you have a read that's stuck behind a write or an erase. And that's basically because the interface is best effort, you don't have information about the SSD. Then, of course, that's the media. We have a good models for the media today, but then you have to add in the ECC scheme, the RAID scheme that's applied. So NAND media also loses charges over time, so you want to refresh the data. And also, we have to convert this read-write interface, a read-write erase interface, into read-write, which is the fast translation layer. So what we are doing with LightNVM and OpenTel SSDs is to take the fast translation layer, the front end of an SSD, the one that makes the data placement decisions, move it into the host, but we leave the media management to the drive. And that's kind of the core of this work and what enables us to have open channel SSDs today. So we propose this, we implement this new storage interface, which provides predictable I/O, makes you able to get predictable I/Os, because now you can divide, put your I/Os to particular parallel units of the SSD. You provide I/O isolations, reduces write amplification, and we do this by, you can make workload-specific optimizations, or you can go all the way and integrate into an application and completely eliminate write amplification if you want to do that. And then the last two things we do is that we enable intelligent data placement. So instead of guessing, having this layer of indirection, when you put it together, you know where you're placing your data. You can make the right I/O scheduling decision for your current state, whereas in the host, you know much more about the application than what the drive does. So that means now the host is aware of the SSD state. Might not know everything, but you can put bounds on this and make it stable. So the contributions are that we introduced the physical page addressing PPA I/O interface. We introduced the Light NVM subsystem in the Linux kernel. We introduced pblock, which is a host-side flash-translation layer for these open channel SSDs. It was basically, if you want to expose the SSD through a block device, this enables you to do that. And we, of course, want to demonstrate the effectiveness of this interface. So looking at the interface, there's three parts. We expose the geometry of the SSD, which it can be a logical, it can be a physical thing. So you can take 8 parallel units, 8 LUNs, 8 dies, and you can put them out of one. But it's up to the SSD vendor to make this decision. Performance, we want to know something about the media, the timings, read, write, erase, how long does it take, so we can build an intelligent model of this. We have media-specific metadata, if we need that. But also we have controller functionality, so does this controller support erase, suspend for that particular media, or something else. It's kept fairly high level. And then the next part is that we have this hierarchical address space where we encode the geometry into it. And at last, since now that we expose the parallel units through this address space, we introduce vector IOs where we can do either read, write, or erase from the host. And by having this interface, you eliminate that these uncertainties, you know what's happening on the SSD, and you can get all the benefits, predictable I/O, reduce your WAF, and have I/O isolations. So to give you an idea of the code geometry, what do I mean by that? So when you look at this into the SSD, you have channels, which channels have a number of parallel units. And within those parallel units, if you're NAND media, you can do planes, blocks, and pages, and sectors. If you're some other media, you can maybe do it differently. But basically, it's generic enough that you can support both NAND media and next-generation non-volatile media today. And basically, what we do here is that you're laying out the parallel units in this address space, sparse address space, and then you use the vector I/O to, and then you use this vector I/O access to actually use it in parallel. So what happens is now that we effectively have each parallel unit, and each parallel unit is relatively low throughput, we want to put stuff together, multiple I/Os together, to actually form the full throughput of the drive. And if you're issuing one I/O to each parallel unit at a time, you have higher host overhead and you'll spend more time in the controller. So the vector I/Os is actually a solution to this, so then enables you to say, I want to do an I/O on that particular parallel unit together with that one and that one. And then your SSD controller will fetch all the data and return that to you. So you can look at it like using a scattergather address list together with your data scattergather list. Right, so that's the overview of the interface. And if you implement this, you get a whole lot of benefits. So on the host side, we did a lot of work with the Light NVM for the Linux kernel, where we integrated three parts. There's the NVMe device driver. You can detect an open channel SSD, which implements this physical page addressing interface. The next part is that you have the Light NVM subsystem, which is just a generic layer, core functionalities, which basically enables exposing what's the geometry, so application know how to talk with the drive, but it also exposes this read, write, erase vector interface. And then on top of that, you can then put targets, which is basically modules that registers with Light NVM, the Light NVM subsystem, that enables you to access this read-write interface, a vector interface. And then in the end, whatever you put on top could be pblock, which is the host-side FTL, and then that would expose a block device. It could be a file system, F2FS, But if it's something that is log structured, you can make it terminate inside of that and then expose the POSIX file system API and so on and so on. And we also enable to do applications where we have libline in Vim where you can actually do direct access to the drive. So you bypass, you can bypass the kernel if you want to, but you basically can build your FTL in user space. So you don't have to go into the kernel to do this. All this pumping is done for you. So, and a little bit about the pblock. So that's it's your common FTL. There's a mapping table at sector granularity. So for this work, we have, for writing to NAND media, and you need to buffer data. So we have write buffering implemented in pblock using a lockless circular buffer. That could be multiple producers because there are multiple applications issuing IOs, and that can be a single consumer for a single write thread, which can run lockless. And then there's the error handling. So for a typical SSD, if you do a write and it fails, you throw the SSD away maybe. But for OpenTel SSD, it's okay to fail. It's okay to have your write or your erase to fail. You need to then take the data that you would have written into that particular place and then recover from it. This can be just to write to the next available page within that. So suddenly errors are okay. And the reason we don't want the firmware in the SSD to recover from this is as soon as the firmware makes a decision for us, we lose determinism, we lose IO predictability. So we want the host to be aware of this, and we want to manage it. And we want to also simplify it so you don't have to do that much work in the software to actually manage it. And this is where we made this design system to actually have media management, the ECC, and so on, the controller. So we hide that, but actually have the data placement and when you build an application that you actually care about. And then, of course, since we need to write out of place, we have a garbage collector, which can rewrite blocks, and we can do refresh data and so on. And there's also, if we turn off the power, there's recovery techniques to recover the state of the FTL and then bring up the disk again. Right. So what we did, how we experimented with it was that we took a Xenix Labs OpenTel SSD. It's an NVMe drive, PCIe Gen 3x8. It has 2 terabytes of MLC NAND. Its geometry is 16 channels, and each channel has 8 parallel units. So in total, this drive has 128 parallel units. So you can basically think of it having 128 drives that you can do one thing and thing at a time. And when you access it, the page size is 16K. That means you need to write 16K at a time. But you can read a 4K if you want to. And similarly, there is attached to those 16K, you have 64 bytes of user out-of-band area. And you would typically use this to maintain an FTL state in the out-of-band area or something else. And then there's there's 4 planes, there's a little bit over 1,000 blocks, and the block size has each side have 256 pages. So the performance of a single parallel unit, so we have 128 of these, and one unit can do 47 megabyte write per second. And when you do 4K read from it, you can do roughly 108 megabytes per second. And when you do 64K, which means you read all 4 planes in parallel, we can get roughly 280 megabytes per second. So basically what it means is that for this particular controller, we are channel bound since we only get 280 and not 400, which we would get if we wouldn't be channel bound. Right, so the evaluation is basically sanity check where does this actually work, which it does, and then the interface flexibility. When you have this interface, what can you actually do? So the base performance when you look at this is that on the x-axis, we have from 4K up to 256K IOs being issued, and then we have a QDEV1 up till 16. And basically what we see is that we are able to, when you use the Victor IO interface, we are not compared to a scalar read-write interface, we are not giving up performance. We are still able to read more than 4 gigabytes per second read performance. And similarly, when we do random read, where we cannot utilize read ahead, we get roughly a little bit above 3 gigabytes per second of the read performance. And we see that the latencies reflects this as you would with the compared to the throughput. So they follow each other as expected. So generally, it works, and everything is good to go. So The next part is now we can start being smart. So this work is the fundamental, it's building blocks. So what we show here is one part that you can do where you don't do a lot of change. And basically what we want to do, normally where you have an SSD, you would write to all the parallel units at the same time to get parallelism. So if you want to write 2 gigabytes per second, you would write to all of them at the same time. Well, if I have a workload and I know that I'm only going to write 400 megabytes per second, I should not write to all 128 parallel units at the same time, because the probability of me having a read coming in at that time is much higher. So instead, I want to limit the number of writers that I have, so the probability of a read being stuck behind a write is less probable to do. So what we do here is like we have like a 256K write at QTF1, and then we have a 256K read at QTF16. And we show the reference performance. So if you only do read or you only do write, then you can do, so this is a random read. So you can either do, when you have all parallel units writing, you can write roughly 4 gigabytes per second. And then when you decrease the number of parallel units from 128 to 64 to 32, so for 64, you can now do roughly 3 gigabytes per second, and then 32, you can do a little bit less than 2 gigabytes per second. And we go all the way down, then you can see how the write performance decreases. And for the random read performance, that's the same the whole way through, because we both basically tell about. So what happens if we mix this? So we do read and write at the same time. For 128, we get like 2 gigabyte read, 2 gigabyte write. That's what it is. But as we then move down the lines, and look at the green lines, then we see, well, if we say write throughput, which is 8 LUNs, then we can actually say, hey, at that point, we only need 8 active units at the same time, writing at the same time. And that means that when we go look at the latency, is that our latency, average latency, is very close to the optimal latency. So you can start playing with this, and this is basically the thing you can do with a block device today. So you know something about your workload, now you can optimize for it in a simple way. So this follows like a block device methodology, yeah. And then the last one is like, so say now that we have, how do we achieve predictable performance? Well, one simple test is say we write somewhere and we read somewhere else on the same SSD, which means we do maybe 4K reads doing a 64K concurrent write. And what we show here, we show the percentile, the 95% up to the 99s. And you have a normal SSD and NVMe SSD today. If there's no reads and no writes, predictable performance is great. But as soon as you add writes to it, the NVMe SSD, its percentiles, its latency grows, and so forth. While as since you can, with the OpenTel SSD and this interface, you can actually have the percentiles to be, and you can, yeah, you can have like close to 99.99, very stable I/O latency. Right. So that's why, so this opens up a full design space of all kinds of things you can do. And, but also why we did this work, there was some lessons we learned over the time. So while you do this, you get the power to trash the disk in minutes if you want to. But some of the things we learned I want to share is that you want to provide warranties to end users, so you still want to have something on SSD that makes accounting for you. Also, yeah, media characterization is complex, and a lot of the value from SSD vendors is doing this media characterization. And the software guys, when I'm building a database, the feedback is I don't really want to care about the media characterization. Write buffering, here you can say, well, if I have battery backup of my server, put write buffering on the host, or if you have persistent memory, put it in there and then ship it off to SSD later. So you can, means you can remove DRAM and so forth and control and so forth. So there's a lot of optimizations to do here. And then the last one is the application agnostic wear labeling. So suddenly now we have parallel units that you can wear out unevenly. And in the next talk, we'll show how that can be solved in a very efficient way. So in conclusion, I mean, we contribute the physical paid addressing PPA IO interface. We do the light NVM subsystem, pblock. We created that, and we just demonstrated the effectiveness of it. It's basically a building block and fundamental interface that you can use to build on top of. And this subsystem has been part of the Linux kernel since 4.4. The user space library that I talked about is onto the next release, 4.11 of the Linux kernel. So from the next kernel release, you can actually just build your FTL without having any custom compiled work done. And then for 4.12, we're going to have this pblock in open source as well. So it's all open source today on the GitHub project side, but it will be part of the what you get on your machine. The specification is open, available, so everyone can look at it and implement it. We have several implementations, hardware implementations from different vendors. So now is a really good time to dive in. The fundamentals are there, and you can actually use it and work with it. Thanks.
I have two questions. The first question is, since the application will store some sort of FTL, what do you... Since the application need to provide some sort of FTL in the memory, let's say, do you envision something which can facilitate persistency of that FTL?
So for some use cases, you want to do it yourself. For others, you want to rely on a library. So libli denvim has support for persisting, making it easier for you, if that's what you mean.
And no, actually, what I'm thinking is, let's say the SSD itself can expose the RAM to the user.
So one of the benefits that you get from OpenTel SSD is that you don't need DRAM to store the mapping table on the drive. So one of the primary other goals of an OpenTel SSD is to be able to not have this linear scalability with your non-volatile storage, 1 gigabyte of DRAM for each 1 terabyte of storage. By moving this up to the host, you can eliminate this DRAM on the drive. So there's an interest to move this into the host and maintain it there with whatever scheme it is, but actually eliminate the DRAM or most of it on the SSD side. So that's why we probably won't have that on the SSD side.
Okay. To maintain. Second question is really regarding the commercialization.
Hi, I have two questions. The first one is regarding the defect management. So in your platform, is that owned by the host or owned by the device itself?
So there's different ways it's done. The host knows which blocks the defect is bad. But if you don't know it, if you're writing to a block and it's bad, what the firmware can do is to tell you, well, you couldn't write here and return an error, and then I would write something somewhere else. So either you can get it up front, we do that today, so that the firmware and the SSDs keep track of bad log management, defect management. But there's bad logs from the NAND media, and then there's grown bad logs. You learn that it's bad. And you can learn that it's bad, or you can use some a priori knowledge that you already know that this is bad.
So second question.
Hello, I'm Ali from University of Minnesota. Quick question, how do you persist every entry update in your mapping table at the host?
So for pblock, we maintain that in the outer band area. So when you write a 4K, we have the LBA stored in that. And then you can come around when you do the full recovery. If you don't have a snapshot or something, then you can recover it that way. So we keep it in the outer band area. Yeah, thanks.
So perhaps this is all in the next talk, but the API to support wear leveling is going to be very interesting because the device knows a lot. It knows about the PE cycles and the ECC signaling. It knows about it's not bad yet, but it's kind of getting bad. It also knows that when it reads a block, it really had to do a lot of ECC to get that back, and you want to refresh it. So you have a very wide, very device-specific API to do a good job. So maybe you'll talk about that in the next talk. That said, this is a cool way to experiment with FTL implementations. I think in practice, layering will argue that you're always going to do an FTL in the firmware below the API, but it's an interesting platform. Am I right that you're going to talk about all that juicy, wide API for wear leveling in the next talk?
So it's actually already solved in this framework. So basically, I agree, there's complexity to the wear leveling on the drive. And what's not said here is that it's a feedback loop. So the drive has a chance to tell the host, you're using me unevenly. So the drive will tell the host, you should probably write differently. So we are very aware of this problem, and it's a good question. And our solution is to, for the drive, to actually be able to tell the host, you're using me in the wrong way. Please redistribute your work. Thanks.
Hui Cheng Li from University of Chicago. So I want to know, why do you use sector-based mapping table instead of page-based?
So, I mean, we want to get the research done, and I think there's been the work done, and there's been a lot of good research on how to maintain a mapping table, persistent mapping table, in all the papers and so on. So we just did a mapping table, sector granularity, took the hit, and then went on. But there's what we're hoping is to see that other people will have like a plug-in architecture to do, well, FTL caching, to do that part, or even integrate it into a file system where you don't need to have this mapping table, and that's eliminated. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Vyacheslav Dubik, Western Digital. I have one question. Okay. So pBlock has garbage collection subsystem. F2FS also has garbage collection subsystem. How to do this stuff?
So you wouldn't. You could use F2FS on top of pBlock, but I would actually throw away pBlock and just use F2FS. So F2FS would drive the OpenTel SSD. So F2FS can write sequentially. So I would actually have F2FS either as a target of the Light NVM subsystem or use another mechanism to make sure to have drive it.
So it's possible to disable pBlock garbage collection subsystem?
Yeah. You make a decision if you want to expose a block device, but if I want to expose a file system, I can do that. And you don't need pBlock.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Shi Qing from University of Chicago, and I have a similar question to the. So you store the write in the host buffer. So what would you do, like if the power if you are facing power loss?
Yes. So the way we solve it with pBlock is, of course, in the worst case, if you do a 4K and you do a flush, we will flush out 16 kilobyte of data. So we increase write implication that way. So in this particular case and for this work, you would lose the 12K. But for you can have the write buffer in the drive, and you don't have this. So this all depending on the workload, if you want to do. But for pBlock and what the work here is that we just do, we take the hit and throw away the 12K and do the persist.
Okay, thank you.
There's a lot of questions. I think there's probably more questions. So Matthias, can you be available after the session in the front here for people to come by and chat with you?
Yeah.
Thank you.